Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we are broadcasting live today, just days before the presidential election, from Marquette University. We have a live audience with us, and we have students with us, and what a place to be. What an election. What fun we're going to have the next 2 hours. Abraham Lincoln, who I like to weave into every possible conversation I can, said that nearly all men can stand adversity, but if you want to test a man's character, give him power. We're now just days away from giving one man an enormous amount of power as president of the United States in a time of economic hardship, in a time of war. The next 2 hours, I guess the question of the 2 hours is who is up to the task. We have several guests with us the first hour, and we'll have a student panel with us, along with the mayor of Milwaukee and former state senator joining us the second hour. And of course, you, the voters, are our special guests today, and we welcome your phone calls. As we always do, we can have you call in at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, or as soon in the audience as you know you want to ask a question, just take one of those two microphones and we'll be happy to hear from you. We have three distinguished guests with us on our panel the first hour. Mike Goucher. Mike and I worked together years ago at WTMJ. He serves as a distinguished fellow in law and public policy at Marquette University Law School. He worked at WTMJ Television for 25 years. Was it that long, Mike? 25
years. Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. Woo! Yes, it was, and he's now at WISN Television. Up Front is his program, and he's a fine, keen political analyst and has been around long enough now to cover a lot of presidential campaigns. Thanks, Mike, very much for being
with
us.
Kathleen.
Also joining us is Craig Gilbert. Craig has been on our show frequently during this election season, which has gone on for a long time. He's been with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for 22 years, and I asked him where he's been since this election season started, and he's been everywhere: Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Colorado, and he can't even remember some of the other states, so he has a lot of stories to tell us and has been following this very closely and in a compelling way for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Thanks to you very much, Craig, for being with us. Also joining us is Kathleen Dolan. Kathleen is a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Her teaching interests are in American government, political behavior, women and politics, research methods, Congress, elections, and voting. Professor Dolan, thank you so much for being with us. Let's start, if we could, with the enormity of this election. It seems to me, and much has been said of the fact that this is an historic election, but when you think about all that's going on, an economic crisis that's been compared to the Great Depression or close to the Great Depression, wars going on in the world, an administration that has not been particularly popular, particularly the last 4 years. Whoever is elected next Tuesday has a huge job before him. Am I overstressing how big this is, Craig?
No, it's big. I think one reason you're seeing the prospect of historic turnout levels is because people feel it's big and they understand the stakes. There have been times in our recent history when that wasn't the case and not as many people voted in the 1990s and the 1980s. It's huge. The interesting thing is, to what extent would an Obama presidency be different from a McCain presidency on some of these big issues? And I think the picture is a little more mixed than maybe some of us think. I mean, I think there are certain clear cases where the contrast is going to be stark. One, for example, would be the Supreme Court. We all know they nominate very different individuals mm-hmm. to that court. Another would be, I think, clearly the impact in the rest of the world of an Obama victory would be different from a McCain victory. I mean, we know that. We know that from the way other people are kind of relating to our election. But on a lot of issues, a lot of foreign policy issues, they're going to be dealing with the same really significant constraints, and it's not as clear how they would handle those issues differently.
Professor Dolan, do you see a stark difference between how either McCain or Obama would rule?
Well, I think one of the things that's going to be particularly challenging, besides the war, besides the economy, I think the next president has to figure out a way to unify the country in a way that we haven't been able to. And you can think back to the presidential election in 2000 and how we have, talked about ourselves as red states and blue states ever since. There's relatively little evidence to show that we're really that diametrically opposed. We're more of a purple nation, as people suggest. But presidential elections do tend to harden people's positions, and they do tend to put people at different sides of a very difficult choice. But I think as a country, we're going to be much better off if we can rally behind whoever is elected president, and that president can start to hopefully work to dispel some of the cynicism that we have about politics and about our government and about our leadership. So I think that's an additional challenge, a much more esoteric one perhaps, but, probably as important for the ability to govern as it is the ability to handle these policy issues.
Mm-hmm. Mike, how big is this election?
Well, I think it's a huge election, Kathleen, and just the other day I saw one of the top aides to Senator McCain talk about 130 million people voting this year. I mean, it's truly remarkable, the numbers. And so I think there is a recognition and awareness of what is at stake, and there are fairly stark contrasts between the candidates. But I would caution that we should go back to 1992 and look at that campaign for a brief history lesson. And I would say that at that time, when Bill Clinton ran and won, there were promises made during the campaign. And those promises eventually had to be put on hold because of the cold, harsh realities that faced Bill Clinton when he took office. And I would venture to say that both John McCain and Barack Obama are going to face those same harsh realities when they enter office. And I'll be interested to see, no matter who is elected, how much of the platform that they've run on, how many of the promises that they made, they'll actually be able to carry out. Because I think the economic challenges we face, the foreign policy challenges, whether it's Iraq or whether it's Afghanistan, these are enormous issues. And I'll be watching to see if they can stay true to their word and the word that they've given the American people during this campaign.
130 million people is a huge number of people.
Right.
Why? Why are that many people voting in this election?
Well, I think one reason is because it's so consequential, but it's also the massive amount of money being spent mobilizing voters. I mean, Wisconsin had a turnout 4 years ago, 75% of eligible voters, which is, I mean, you really can't get much higher than that. I mean, that's about close to the population of people who would conceivably vote under almost any circumstances. So the turnout increase in Wisconsin is not going to be dramatic if there is an increase. But in other states that haven't been part of this process before, it's going to be huge. And also because the Obama campaign is really nationally organized or mobilized in a way that the Kerry campaign wasn't last time, you're going to see some increase in the Democratic turnout in non-contested states as well. So I think it's a combination of the stakes, the perceived stakes. It's a combination of the money that's being spent mobilizing people, and just the this sense in and to some degree even the political polarization that we've seen in recent elections.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of feeds that sense of it motivates both sides.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It seems to me as though the Republicans have always been better organized when it comes to the ground game. I think there's a stark difference in that in this election, and we noticed that when we went to Iowa, that this campaign was very, very well organized. Two questions. Let's start with you, Professor Dolan. Do the Democrats have the advantage here? And they obviously have the advantage when it comes to money. Is that unfair? Is it a stark, call to action to get money, this kind of money, out of politics?
Well, I'm not sure how you come down on the money question. I mean, this is the first presidential election since we've had the national funding system where one candidate has taken the money and the other has not, and as a result, we've had such a disparity.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Obama would certainly argue with you that all of the money that he's raised has come in very small donations, from millions and millions of voters, and so he tries to make the argument that his system is actually better because it brings more people into the process and gives the average person a voice. Having said that, Senator McCain has been very critical of his decision to not to accept the public money, and that has put the Republican campaign at a disadvantage. Senator McCain has had some financial support from the RNC, so that has worked out some of it. But Senator Obama has put together a ground game and an organization that we have just not seen before. I mean, they are masters of technology. They are masters of logistics. It really is the model, for what goes forward. And they have been able to do it because of the money he raised. That seems to be, I mean, we'll have to see what the future holds, but that seems to be a singular achievement of him and his candidacy.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it makes a big difference, Mike, to be able, so close to the election, to buy all of this television time, millions of dollars, to run a half-hour program?
Absolutely. I think, you know, for Barack Obama right now, he's still trying to seal the deal with a group of voters out there who might be predisposed to vote for a Democrat but still aren't 100% sure about Barack Obama being that Democrat. So I think any time you have a chance to put yourself in front of millions of people at any one time and to give essentially an unfiltered message, your message, without facing hard questions during that time, that obviously works to a candidate's advantage. Any candidate would die for that opportunity. I might add a couple of things. On the money front, I think that's, you know, that's one of those, it's in the eye of the beholder. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? If you're a fan of Barack Obama, you say, what a great thing that he has all this money and he can wage his kind of campaign. I think the one concern that is coming out of this election, and we'll see where public financing of campaigns goes after this election, but I do think there will be greater and greater calls for transparency, that some of the transparency in terms of who's donating what, it's not what it could be or probably should be. On the issue of organization, if you talk to Obama's people, and I know Craig has done a lot of that during the last year, but if you talk to their people, for example, in Wisconsin, what makes their campaigns so different than past Democratic campaigns is the fact that they're contesting everything. In the past, let's take 4 years ago, John Kerry did not devote a lot of attention to an Ozaukee County, a Washington County, a Waukesha County.
Right.
It just sort of wrote those off. They're Republican counties. And they will be again this year. But having said that, there are Obama people on the ground. They hope to cut into some of those margins. And so you're seeing the kind of campaign, because of the financial resources and because he really is trying to fight a 50-state campaign or wage a 50-state campaign, you're seeing Democrats in places that you're just not used to seeing them this time of year. And I think they feel long-term, maybe this is a lesson for other Democrats. You know, he's written about that in past books, that you just can't concede a whole bunch of states. Why should Democrats do that? Mm-hmm. So I think you'll see other people, if they can, try to adopt that philosophy.
Well, Professor Dolan, I think, had her hand up.
Well, Mike makes a really good point, and the 50-state strategy that Howard Dean, when he became chair of the DNC, you know, wanted to try to institute and was laughed at because, you know, we really had kind of hardened into this notion that you fight for the states that you've held in the past and you can't really expand the map terribly well. Senator Obama has done that very well. But beyond contesting for voters in those places, he's also had the McCain campaign on the defense in so many places. Mm-hmm. And that's the other side of the 50-state strategy, is causing your opponent to have to spend what now is scarce resources trying to defend the places like in Ozaukee County or something like that. So now we see states all around the country where the McCain campaign is running. I mean, McCain went on the air in Arizona over the last couple of days because you know, he has to win his home state.
Right.
So having people on the ground everywhere else requires your opponent to have people on the ground everywhere else, and the campaigns are just completely mismatched in the ability to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Just one point about the air wars and one point about the ground game. I think in Wisconsin, both sides really, really turned their base out in 2004. And so I don't see a dramatic difference on the Democratic side between the number of people they turn out this time and 2004, because the Kerry campaign and the Independent Act turnout operation, which was really well-funded, really did a lot. And the Bush campaign did a whole lot, an unprecedented Republican turnout effort. So to me, the real question is, what's the fall-off between the Bush campaign turnout operation in 2004 and the McCain campaign turnout operation in 2008? Whether there's an organizational, there's no way they can match Bush in 2004, because Bush in 2004 had 3 years to plan a campaign. They were up from the beginning. They knew they were going to be the nominee. You just can't replicate that. And also the question of intensity and enthusiasm. What's the fall off there? So that's one thing on the ground. And on the air, you know, political advertising, the impact of political advertising is really marginal when it comes to persuading voters directly through television advertising. But it can have an impact, as we saw with the Swift votes in 2004, by driving news coverage, which is really much more dramatic.
Right.
And one thing about this 30-minute ad, first of all, it doesn't really matter whether it was money well spent, because they have the money and they can spend
a lot of money.
And they just don't have any hard choices to make when you have that much money. But it was a news event. I mean, they spent the money and they created a news event. It was being covered as a news event, not just an ad that people saw. And it dominated. You know, if you can spend $3 million to dominate that day's coverage, and as one of 6 or 7 days left in the campaign, that's money well spent.
And make it a little more interesting than what Ross Perot did, I think. It was obviously a piece highly flattering for Barack Obama, but it was more interesting than Ross Perot reading office charts, don't you think?
They're very good. I mean, that's one of the touches of the Obama campaign. They're very good at selling their message,
right.
and they do it with great production values, and you choose venues that put their candidate in the best possible
right.
light. They're very good at that.
Yeah. Let's go to Sarah Palin briefly, and then we're going to go to the audience here. So get your questions ready. I know you want to talk about this, so get them ready, and we'll be with you momentarily. I can't help but wonder, and there are so many issues here when it comes to women in politics, and because you're a woman who has a special interest in politics, let's go to you first, Kathleen, on this. I can't help but wonder why she was chosen as the vice presidential nominee. And I'm wondering if the McCain campaign, so many people have said she's a drag on the ticket, she's bringing it down substantially, that their idea of putting a woman on the ticket, they just got the wrong person here, thinking that women would vote for her because she's a woman. Two questions. One is, do you think McCain is second-guessing himself now? Would he have been much more ahead in the polls now if he had run more of a 2000-ish campaign and if he had chosen somebody else? What's her impact?
Enormous in lots of different ways. John McCain is probably not second-guessing himself because there's nothing we've ever learned about him that says that he's anything other than resolute. When he makes a decision, you know, he sticks mm-hmm. with it and he'll defend it to the end. Are there people in his campaign second-guessing that decision? Yes, mm-hmm. and they have been for a while now, I think. His choice of Sarah Palin was a reactionary choice. And when I say that, I mean that Senator Obama chose Senator Biden first, and the McCain campaign was able to sort of see what was, you know, perhaps going to play. It has been widely reported and known that Senator McCain couldn't choose the two most likely candidates that he was comfortable with, either former Governor Ridge or Senator Joe Lieberman. So given that he couldn't do what he wanted to do, or at least he felt the campaign constraints wouldn't allow him to do what he wanted to do, then it was, you know, what can we do, big splash, et cetera, which I think was influenced in part because Senator Obama did not choose Senator Clinton as his running mate, which opened the door for a continuation of the dialogue about women at that high level. And Sarah Palin has, I think, you know, what the data are showing us now is that she has not brought as much to the ticket as they had hoped. She has not been the draw for women. She has not been the draw for moderates and independent voters. If they had chosen a different woman, would they be getting more traction in that regard? It's hard to say. Women voters do not vote based on sex and gender considerations primarily, so a different Republican woman may not have gotten any more traction with women voters. Would a different woman candidate have gotten more traction with moderates and independents? Probably, if we assume that that person was different in terms of experience and background and things like that. But Governor Palin's candidacy coming on the heels of Senator Clinton's candidacy in the nominations process just really complicates questions of gender and politics and women in politics in a way that, you know, will take us a while to sort out.
Mm-hmm. Craig, you want to respond?
Yeah, a couple of things about Governor Palin. I think that, you know, the fact that he was picking a woman sort of overshadowed what was really a pretty remarkable departure about that choice, which is that, you know, when you look at the history of these things, nominees always pick Washington insiders as their running mates, always, almost always. And the last time that didn't happen was Spiro Agnew in 1968. So for John McCain to pick somebody who had no Washington experience was a dramatic, dramatic departure from the norm. And they picked Washington insiders. It's partly because we've had a lot of nominees who've been governors and they've wanted that balance, but also just because they want, you know, that's the role is perceived as if this is somebody, you know, who can step in and has that Washington background. And so that made it a risky choice. And also it part of that decision, embedded in that decision, was that the McCain campaign felt that just making the experience versus inexperience argument wasn't going to be good enough. It wasn't good enough for Hillary Clinton. It's not going to be good enough for them. And they may have been right about that, but it also meant that they kind of gave up a lot of purchase on that argument, and they went to kind of contesting the message of change by picking Sarah Palin. And now they're sort of coming back to the experience argument again, but I think, in not as powerful a position as they would have been had there been a different choice. So that was a trade-off.
She certainly has captivated the attention of conservatives and liberals and everybody. But there's something about watching her. A lot of people are watching her. Is that favorable for her, Mike?
Well, I mean, you really, I guess you look at public opinion polls to decide, you know, granted some people will contest the accuracy of those public opinion polls this year, but I mean, if you look at most of them, there is a great divide when it comes to Sarah Palin, with perhaps a few more people not caring for her than a few more people who do care for her. But your point is well taken. There is no question that people have a reaction to her, and in many cases, it's a strong reaction to her. And I woke up this morning, and I happened to be watching CNN, and they're talking about Politico.com is reporting that there's going to be sort of a retreat immediately following the election amongst key conservatives, and they're going to be talking about the future of the Republican Party. And already they're talking about her as being one of the very key pieces of whatever they do 4 years from now, that she's moved to the head of the pack. You know, as much of a risk as we could say this was for John McCain, in many respects for Sarah Palin, there was not that same risk involved. You're a governor in Alaska that a few people know about, but most people don't. All of a sudden, you're on a national stage. Now, we can argue over whether she's always performed as perhaps she wishes she had. Would have on that national stage. But for her, it's almost a no-lose situation. You get the attention, you jump to the head of the pack, you introduce yourself. If your candidate doesn't win, if your running mate doesn't win, well, 4 years from now, we'll see what happens. So for her, I think it's interesting. And I do agree with Craig. I think for John McCain, it really came down to making a decision on whether he was going to run a campaign on experience or run a campaign based on change. And I think ultimately he said, who am I? I like to think of myself as a change agent.
Right.
I don't want to run an experienced campaign because that didn't work for Hillary Clinton. I don't want to turn this into a generational campaign, which is another issue, I think. And so I think he chose what he was most comfortable with, and that was the whole idea of being a maverick and being the agent of change.
We're broadcasting live from Marquette University this morning, just days before the presidential election. We're going to welcome questions from the audience in just a moment, so grab yourself a microphone. And we also are inviting phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. John Treader is back at our studios answering your phone calls. We have a great audience, a terrific panel. Our audience, students from Marquette University. Next hour, we'll be talking with people from various campaigns who've been working to get out the vote among young people. That will be the focus of next hour. And to your phone calls and questions in just a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're broadcasting live from Marquette University. For both hours, just days before the presidential election, and our guests are Kathleen Dolan, who's a professor of in the Department of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, Craig Gilbert, who's been on the political trail for months now, Washington Bureau Chief of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Mike Boucher, Distinguished Fellow in Law and Public Policy at Marquette University, and host of Upfront with Mike Boucher on WISN Channel 12 here in Milwaukee. And let's go to our audience. Hi.
Hi. Jerry from Milwaukee. For the 12th election in a row, we in organized labor have been ignored and marginalized. We are now at 7.1% of the workforce. Over this last generation, we have been Reaganed, NAFTA'd, China'd, and Kafka'd to death. All of our basic industries in this country have been decimated, and we are routinely ignored by all the major media outlets. John Sweeney, the president, national president of the AFL-CIO, has not been covered during this election cycle. Neither has David Newby in the state. And I want to get the reaction of the panel to this basic fact that those of us in organized labor have been ignored.
Okay, Jerry, thanks. Craig?
Well, I'm not quite sure how to respond to that. I mean, organized labor is one of many constituency groups that are important in this election. They've been important in elections in the past. We sort of try to cover all of them as because they matter. But I'm not sure the measure of that is whether you know, an individual leader in organized labor, how many column inches they get in the newspaper or not. I think I certainly don't feel like we've ignored them. So I guess I'll just sort of let people be the judge of our coverage on that.
Okay. Let's go to a phone call. Paul is calling in from Waupaca. Good morning, Paul.
Hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
All right. How are you?
Yeah, well, I figured I'm 76 years old. I was involved in every election I could vote. And I have an opinion, just like everybody. I kind of, my personal opinion, would vote for a Palin for president and an eyelash. I mean, she brings fresh air to the environment. I'm kind of fed up with politicians as such, like Bennett. Adding $110 billion to $700 billion, nobody ever gave me the numbers on how they got there. But anyway, she's like, that's a fresh air to me. You know, just like Reagan was an actor, he wasn't a lawyer. I think she ought to be given a fair chance to go for it.
What about McCain?
Well, he's a politician just like Obama. They both speak the same language. One is a little bit more articulate than the other. So people, voters are a little bit... And they'll go for anybody that can tell them how they're going to solve their problem. And I don't believe that's going to happen in 4 years. I don't think Congress is going to solve all these problems that were being promised. And I think that'd be good years for fun to get used to Washington, D.C. BS, and maybe she could do something about it in the second 4 years.
All right. Thanks, Paul, very much. Do you think there will be people who will vote for the Republican ticket for Sarah Palin?
You know, the conventional wisdom is, you know, a running mate doesn't really matter that you vote for the candidate at the head of the ticket. But I would tell you that I do think she has energized some people. I think there are some people who feel passionately about her. And so I would imagine that this year that old axiom might be tested a bit. I think there will be some people who vote for John McCain in part because they like her. And I think he does raise a good point. You just look at when they're on the campaign trail. Who draws the bigger crowds? Sarah Palin or John McCain?
Right.
There's no question about that.
Right.
So, yeah.
Audience, Becky from Marquette University. Hello, Becky.
Hi. I'm out here with a nonprofit, nonpartisan campaign called Power Vote, and we're asking young people to sign a pledge to vote on November 4th to hold the next administration accountable for investing in clean, renewable energy and for cutting our carbon emissions, whoever is in office. Do you think that given the over 350,000 young people who have signed on to this pledge, that the next president should make passing federal level legislation to address climate change an immediate priority in the first 100 days of the presidency? And if not, if he doesn't do this, what do you think the reaction will be?
Thank you very much.
You know, this is actually an issue where there's less difference in some respects between the candidates than we might have gotten with a different set of nominees, because within the Republican Party, John McCain has been more vocal about climate change than other Republicans, and kind of more open to addressing it in a kind of concerted way. And so, I think both candidates, whoever is elected, I think climate change is going to be on their agenda.
Whew, we talk about the big issues. There are so many issues, Professor Dolan. Do you think the candidates have similar positions on this?
I mean, Craig is right that, you know, it probably will be a priority for either of them. But when you say priority, you have to think about where on the list it's going to be, and making some assumption that there'll be some major effort in the first 100 days is probably less realistic. I mean, the next president is going to come in and still be faced with the war situation. The economy is not going to rebound, you know, to honey and roses by January, such that there are going to be lots of things. I mean, Craig alluded to the fact that there are going to be lots of things that each candidate has talked about that are going to have to be on hold a little while longer than either of them might prefer as they shift through these sorts of things. So, and the premise of the question was, you know, young people are signing on as representatives of this issue, and are they going to be heard on that issue? You know, the short and cynical answer is no, because they will be heard at some point, but will it leapfrog to the front? It's probably less likely.
Mm-hmm.
I would caution again, 100 days, a lot of promises, a lot of pledges are going to be put on hold. When they take office, it's going to be very challenging, and I think things that were talked about are just going to have to take a backseat to issues like the economy and what we're going to do in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Right. To the audience again. Hi.
Hi. Bill Stoudemire from Wauwatosa, and I'm taking up directly on Mike's comment. One of the issues that has been fallen off the radar, given our economic and overseas problems, is health care. And for 2, 3, 5 years, we've heard how health care is broken in this country, and there are, what, 40, 50 million of us Americans who have no health care. And my question to the panel is, I don't know if it makes a difference which man is elected president, but do you have any perception that there will be some improvement, something that will reduce the influence perhaps of the large health care insurers and the large pharmaceutical companies?
And let me ask you before you leave the microphone, do you have any assurance that either one of the candidates will be better at dealing with this issue than the other? Or
not really, because they haven't spoken about it lately. I happen to be on Medicare. I'm concerned about that, too, but I'm more concerned about the state of health care overall in the United States.
Right, it's a big concern, sure. Professor Dolan?
Well, this is one of the issues on which their plans and policies and proposals are more different than similar, I think. John McCain advocates for a system that would look very different than what Barack Obama would. But again, both of them are costly plans, and is the money going to be available to do these sorts of things? I think that Senator Obama particularly, before all of the economic problems really reared their heads, you know, was probably more likely to make health care reform a centerpiece. So will we see action on it? Very possibly, but probably we will get smaller plans and smaller marginalized improvements in policies than we would have, you know, if the economy were much stronger.
Mm-hmm. You know, Obama spent a ton of money advertising on this issue, both promoting his own plan and also attacking the McCain plan. So it has been, in that sense, a pretty big part of the debate, of the campaign debate. I mean, the one, you know, kind of cautionary lesson, of course, is in the Clinton years, after Clinton was elected, what happened to his effort to obviously flawed effort to pass health care reform. And I'm sure that whoever is elected president, you know, has studied that that lesson and will try to learn from it in terms of getting anything passed.
Right.
I think one of the interesting things, if I might add to that, about this campaign, as you've heard, very, very little about what we're going to do with other related challenges such as Medicare. I was talking with former Governor Thompson the other day, former Secretary of Health and Human Services in the Bush administration, and he is almost beside himself about the prospects of what's going to happen to Medicare as soon as 2012. He said, we're going to run out of money. And to be honest, you don't really hear either campaign talking a lot about that.
No, you don't.
You don't really hear them talking a lot about Social Security fixes.
Mm-hmm.
And there are organizations out there, for example, the Concord Coalition, which has tried to bring this issue to the forefront, but you do not hear any real in-depth discussion of some of these major challenges that are, granted, they're not health care policy per se, but they are the same issues in many respects.
Yeah. Let's go to another phone call. And it's Greg from Mosinee. Hi, Greg.
Good morning. Hi. I caught the show maybe a little bit late, and I heard him talking about the Obama's organization and the campaign. And I was curious to ask the panel, where do you think that campaign would be without the economy faltering? And why is it as close as it is? I guess it's a matter of which poll you would listen to. But it seems to be a little bit closer than I would have thought it would have been. And I'll take my answers off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much, Craig, for the call.
Well, oh, excuse me.
Go ahead. Yep.
One thing that we have to think about in the last closing days of the campaign is that there's a difference between looking at what is the sort of inevitable tightening in the national public opinion polls and the notion that we elect the president in the United States based on the Electoral College. So we can look at, the national popular votes appearing to be tightening, and that's certainly the case. But that doesn't necessarily speak to where the election is going per se, because, you know, following the polls isn't necessarily going to tell us what's going to happen next Tuesday. So that's one thing that, you know, we always like to remind people. The second piece, the premise of the question being, you know, if the economy hadn't gone in the toilet as quickly as it had recently, would the I assume what he was asking is, would Obama be
right
ahead, and why isn't he more ahead given that? Mm-hmm. There are lots of moving parts in elections and in campaigns, and there are lots of things that drive these things. I mean, Senator Obama's lead in the national polls, you know, has been fairly steady and stable for the last month or so, which is certainly driven by the economy. But there are lots of other things that are at play. So I don't think we want to lay any status of the campaign at the feet of one particular issue, because the war is still important. President Bush's popularity, sure, sort of retrospective ideas are also important.
But his numbers, Craig, really did shoot up after we experienced this calamity on Wall Street.
Yeah, I mean, if you charted the polling trend, I mean, it was like Lehman Brothers, you know, that was
right.
That was where, you know, that was like the 90-degree turn in the polling numbers. And so obviously that was big. The debates were big, I mean, because a lot of people came to the debates without knowing a lot about Obama, and he kind of clearly passed some sort of threshold test there. You know, the election is, you know, the election's not over, but it's not a jump ball like it was in 2000, 2004 either. So when you say, you know, why is it as close as it is, it kind of depends on what you think the real, you know, kind of the proper baseline for comparison is. And we live in we've been living in an era of incredible political balance between the two parties. So I don't think it's, you know, to expect, you know, a 15-point margin with all the advantages that the Democrats have and the political climate and money, I don't think is realistic. I think it's not surprising to me that Obama isn't further ahead given the fundamentals of this election. And there's some evidence in the polling of some narrowing, but it's a little ambiguous. I mean, it's not all that clear how much narrowing is going on. And as Kathleen pointed out, when you look at the Electoral College, it's still a really daunting picture for Senator McCain.
Right.
He still has to sort of thread the needle in a big, big way. I mean, just, you know, I live in Virginia, and it's odd to be. I mean, it's very weird to be, you know, to have to go to events in Virginia to see the candidates rather than events in Wisconsin, and that tells you a lot about the state of play right now.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting on a couple of levels. To go back to what Craig said, I mean, you can definitely see the impact of what is happened in the financial markets on this race. And I think there were polls earlier in the year, I think, indicated there was a certain fatigue with the war in Iraq, and there was a certain belief that the country was headed in the wrong direction, and I think that all played to Barack Obama's advantage. But it wasn't that long ago when we had the situation in Georgia, and you had the clash between the Russian forces and the Georgian folks, and you're sitting there and you're having this discussion about national security and foreign policy. And at that moment in time, and this was, I think, around early September, John McCain was doing very well. And, in fact, on September 14th in a poll in Wisconsin, John McCain was down by 1 point.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then Lehman Brothers collapsed, the markets began to show distress, and since that time, it's been we've seen the margin grow.
Yeah.
Up until fairly recently. So I think you can't you can't ignore the impact of the economy and what we've
right.
seen in the last 6 weeks or so.
Kathleen.
Well, I would argue, I mean, all of what Mike has said I would agree with, but I would argue that also during that same time period, you had Sarah Palin's appeal starting to really deteriorate. You had John McCain
True.
Suspend his campaign and say, I'm going to Washington, and that
yeah.
clearly has been a problem. And even the, you know, we are all Georgians speech that he made didn't play well as he thought. So there has been some deterioration in the kinds of things that have happened in the McCain campaign that all I think that dovetailed with the economic collapse. So, again, I would argue there's not just one thing going on. There have been a lot of trends against.
We're broadcasting live from Marquette University, the Union, and we're having a wonderful time. We're going to continue with our phone calls and with our live studio audience just days before the election. Grab a microphone here if you'd like to speak to the many issues in this campaign. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Kathleen Dunn. We're broadcasting live from Marquette University with students and political junkies, and we have a great panel talking about the election, which is, I can't believe it, I have no idea what I'm going to do with my life come next Wednesday. We can analyze it. I'll look at the polls, which I've been looking at five times a day, but what am I going to do? I'm sure some of you are the same way. It's just BS. We're going to sleep? We're going to sleep. Yeah, that could be, but we won't be sleeping Tuesday night. I want to talk a little bit about race in this campaign. It seems to me as though one of the reasons this is a historic election is that you have an African-American candidate, and I still can't believe that's happened in America. I remember working in Georgia in the 70s when I was a VISTA volunteer, and we had to bring – we still had to – students, I was working in a black community, and we had to sit in the upper part of the movie theater because they wouldn't let us sit in the lower part of the movie theater. And it wasn't that long ago, and it seems to me – as though this is a huge, huge presidential election because of that fact. And what this candidacy, particularly the Obama candidacy, has done for minorities in this country is extraordinary. To see people cry, to see people wait in long, long lines, African Americans particularly, the Hispanic vote, that is very large in America considering our history, our horrendous history with this issue.
That's huge. I mean, you think about when Barack Obama was born, and you think about what was going on in this country at the time he was born, down south, and here we are, and at the precipice of electing a man to hold the highest office in the land. When back in the early 1960s, he might not have been able to sit at a lunch counter. It's a pretty dramatic thing, I think, for this nation to experience. So. For many reasons, this year is historic, but none larger than that.
Yeah. Let's go to the audience again. Where are we? We're welcoming contributions from the audience. Hi.
Hello, I want to thank the panel for being here. And this is to Mike Goucher. He's been in the media for quite a few years. For the last 10 elections, I'm 58. Basically, I've been given an apple and an orange to vote for, Republicans and the Democrats. And since the age of the internet, there are alternative media sources now where we can get more information about candidates, where we couldn't get that off the mainstream media because mainstream media just doesn't want to cover the third-party candidates very well. In fact, they're doing a lousy, lousy job. And then that brings it down to the local media because the local media basically have to listen to their corporate bosses. And they're not bringing up these third. And there's another African American person that's on the on our Wisconsin ballot, and she's a female, and her name is Cynthia McKinney. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to ask the audience here: do you want to be given apples and oranges the rest of your life, or do you want to be given apples, oranges, bananas, and strawberries? Because I think just the time has changed in this country where we need apples, we need oranges, but we really need bananas and strawberries. So. So let's start let's start asking the media, let's start putting the pressure on the mainstream media to represent these third party candidates, and let's make sure we put pressure on these debates because they're not even letting these candidates show up on debates. It's really a shame that I have to go to YouTube and listen to a really great speaker like Cynthia McKinney, and that's my opinion. But I have to go to YouTube and listen to her speeches. She came to the Wisconsin.
I'm going to need to hold you there.
Fighting Bob Fest, and she spoke. It was a great speech. So I just want the people to know that you have choices, but you have to go and dig for them.
All right.
So let's get into it. I want to ask Mike, how can we stop this? How can we stop this? Just apples and oranges.
That's a simple question. Yeah. I will say that, I end up watching a fair amount of television like Kathleen, and it's interesting how many times I've seen Bob Barr on CNN and how many times I've seen Ralph Nader on CNN, and I probably have seen Cynthia McKinney a little less, to be honest, but I do think they are getting some coverage. I would agree with you that it's a tough situation, as Craig and I were involved in a debate here, I think in this room, in 2004, and it was a Democratic presidential candidate debate. And there were people on that stage who had no chance whatsoever of winning the Democratic nomination. Al Sharpton and Dennis Kucinich, to name two. But they were there. And I sort of in my own head, I wrestled about, should they be a part of it? And in retrospect, I was glad they were a part of it. I would tell you personally, I think it would be interesting if a Bob Barr, if a Ralph Nader, if a Cynthia McKinney were involved in at least one of the presidential debates, just to contrast the views. I thought the Ross Perot factor was fascinating in that debate. And there are different points of view, but don't hold your breath waiting for it to happen. I guess that's the sad part about it. And, you know, you raise a valid point. But I think there are a lot of reasons why the major party candidates do not want to have that happen. And, yeah. And believe me, they carry a lot of clout in the negotiations over the formats for the debates.
Let's go to another phone call. It's Reed from Clintonville. Hi, Reed.
Oh, good morning. Can you hear me there, Kathleen?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'll just ask a couple of questions and then listen off the air. The first question is concerning the hierarchy of the Republican Party. How might Mitt Romney, Bobby Jindal, Governor of Minnesota.
Plenty.
How might these men and maybe Mr. Bloomberg and Rudy Giuliani respond to Ms. Palin? I don't know if she's put herself forward at this Republican convention, hierarchy convention that's to be held, or if someone else has, who might have put her name forward? And then also,
Let's hold it with that because we're running out of time. Well, Thanks, Reed, for the call. Thanks, Reed. Let's go to you, Craig.
Well, good question that we've been talking about is the future of the Republican Party, 2012. If John McCain doesn't win, who are the potential nominees in 2012? Sarah Palin, his name is on the table. Mike Huckabee, Mitt Romney. But, you know, the interesting thing about that is the party's going to be faced with some really interesting choices. I mean, that Sarah Palin, Mike Huckabee takes the party in a more populist direction. Both candidates who've spent a lot of time railing at Wall Street, which is unusual for a Republican candidate in recent times. The real drama will be how if the Republicans have a bad election for the second cycle in a row, they did in 2006, will be how the party resolves those differences and those fault lines and which way they turn. And if they turn to Sarah Palin or Mike Huckabee, it's going to be a different Republican Party than if they turn Mitt Romney or a more traditional candidate.
Right. Professor Dolan.
Well, in 4 years is a lifetime in American politics. So, you know, we start now saying, in 12, you know, Sarah Palin might be right up front. And people are mentioning Bobby Jindal quite a bit, governor of Louisiana, if only to show that the Republican Party can get behind and support minority candidates as well. It's going to be really impossible. And Craig's right. The Republicans are going to have to do, you know, some sort of internal work on the direction of the party. But 4 years is an enormously long period of time. And Sarah Palin may be a footnote by then, or she may, you know, be the standard bearer. But it's impossible to predict, you know, what direction they're going to take.
Right. Do you think about, I think about this, and we've done programs on this as well, who the candidates, who McCain would surround him with, who are the best and the brightest, who he would bring to Washington? Because I think those people are very influential. I think what they say, their advice, their expertise in certain areas. Is that of concern to you? Do you have any inkling of who might go to Washington with them?
Sure. I mean, it's interesting, particularly in McCain's case, because obviously he has much more of a history on foreign policy. And he has advisors who sort of fall into both the kind of so-called neoconservative camp and the more traditional kind of realist camp, the people, the kind of foreign policy advisors that Bush 1 had. So we kind of know more about that question on the foreign policy side. And the economic side, where he has less history, I think it's less predictable where he would turn, whether he would be more of a budget hawk or whether he would be more of a kind of supply sider who put tax cuts above kind of everything else and had a more so-called pro-growth policy. And that's one of the dramas. As long as McCain has been around, it's interesting that's still a kind of a question mark.
Yeah. We're out of time. Where are you going to be election night? Just a quick answer.
I'll be right. I'll be in the newsroom in Milwaukee.
Uh-huh.
I'll be in Channel 12 studios on election night doing analysis.
Doing analysis. Great. Yeah. That's fun, huh?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Kathleen?
I'll be at home with my snacks, letting my children stay up late to watch the returns.
That's what I'm going to do, too. Yeah. having people over for pizza. Thank you all so much for being with us. Thanks for coming to Marquette. We are broadcasting live from Marquette. I'm sorry we didn't get to all of your in-studio questions, but don't worry, we have another hour to go. And we want to thank very much Mike Uche, Distinguished Fellow in Law and Public Policy at Marquette University, host of Upfront with Mike Uche. Watch for his election analysis on election night. Thanks to Craig Gilbert, who's been with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for a number of years, Washington Bureau Chief. And thanks to Kathleen Dolan, who's a professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Rhonda Fanning produced the hour. Thanks, Rhonda, very much. And we had a number of people we would like to thank. From Marquette University, we want to thank Mike Uche. We want to thank Rana Altenberg and Ann Takinhani and Steve Schultz, Father Robert Wild from Wisconsin Public Radio, Rhonda, Brad Kohlberg, who's done engineering work for us, and John Treader, Mimi Notstein, Katie Mattson. There's Katie over there, Sandy Lewinauer, many thanks, Lisa Nalbandian, Barb Dubinsky, Cheryl Ward, and Sarah Covington. Thanks, everybody, for all of your help. We have news coming up from National Public Radio and another hour to go, so please stay with us as we hear from people from the various campaigns. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Mm-hmm.